I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's Tuesday, the 10th of December. I'm Jules Breach. He's Andy Bressel. And this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. This week, we're going to be talking about the appointment of Nigel Pearson. What can Watford fans expect? We'll also get stuck into Dean Smith and Aston Villa. Have they flattered to deceive in the Premier League? And we'll also discuss homophobia in football. Andy, how was your weekend? We were in the studio together on Saturday at BT Sport.
And very enjoyable it was. What did you have for lunch?
Thank you very much. Potato wedges were on the menu. And clearly I couldn't get them out of my mind because when trying to talk about Macclesfield players not being paid their wages live on air, I said Macclesfield haven't been paid wedges.
And you would have got away with it if it hadn't been for that dastardly Mark Pugach.
Dear, what am I like? Anyway, it was a fun moment. Have to laugh at yourself, haven't you?
It was fun. And I tell you what, afterwards, I was more and more aware. I went out and met some friends who were over from France after the game. And
After the game or after the show?
After the games and the show. Of course, it was all about the game, about Borussia Mönchengladbach and Bayern Munich, which was amazing. But I met some friends from France, and one of them said to me, "J'aime beaucoup ton émission avec Jules."
Excuse me.
And I was like, "Jules, who's Jules?" Oh, Jules! Right.
Okay. Jules!
So, yeah, people in France love
me
as well.
What does that mean? Can you translate?
I love your programme with Jules.
Ah, that's nice. At least they're being nice.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
I thought you said it in French that I wouldn't understand.
Protects you. Yeah.
Well, look, it was another busy weekend of football. And particularly Watford, one of the teams that we want to focus on today, because they've appointed Nigel Pearson, although he wasn't managing the team for Saturday's draw against Crystal Palace.
Saturday's draw with Crystal Palace, which looked like it was pushing poor old Robbie Savage over the edge.
It wasn't the best game, was
it? I've never seen a man look so sad on a sofa that comfy.
He needs to cheer up, though, doesn't he? I mean, I watched the game back on Match of the Day afterwards and that evening, and obviously, it wasn't the best of the games that we had at 3 o'clock, but it wasn't as bad as he made out.
Well, mainly because of...
He was just jealous everyone else had goals to talk about.
Yeah,
and he didn't.
Probably. mainly because of Wilf Zaha and his chip, though. That was the bit that made it exciting.
Yeah.
He was annoyed, wasn't he?
He was indeed. But let's talk Nigel Pearson then, because he was watching from the director's box, having been appointed the night before. So Hayden Mullins still took charge of this game on Saturday. What do you make of the appointment of Nigel Pearson? Because I think it surprised everybody. No one was expecting, this wasn't a name that any of us had in the hat, particularly last week when we discussed who Watford could potentially bring in. Nigel Pearson wasn't in our thoughts at all.
No, he wasn't. But it makes a lot of sense, I think, if you think about it. Because with Watford, they're never going to go for a huge name coach. That's just not what they do. The coach is not their priority. We've seen that through the way they get through coaches. And Pearson is definitely a horse for a course. You know, you think back to 14-15 when he got Leicester out of a dreadful situation at the bottom. It was an incredible escape, really. And, you know, that was, I guess, one of his keynotes. He did a really good job at Leicester. In fact, one of my best memories of Nigel Pearson, I think it would have been, 2012, 2013? It was after the playoff with between Watford and Leicester, actually, when he was Leicester City manager. It was just before they got promoted. A very different Leicester side. Anthony Knockhart was there, of course. Mm-hmm. Harry Kane was on loan. He played in the second leg of that playoff game. And it was the playoff game with the incredible ending where it was 2-2 on aggregate. Leicester got a penalty for what was really a dive.
Knockhart missed a penalty, didn't he?
He missed it. It was a double save from Almunia. And Watford took it straight up the other end and Troy Deeney scored, 12 seconds later. It was one of the most... It's the most incredible end to a football match I've ever seen that I've been at. And obviously, like, Watford were on cloud nine after that. I mean, Deeney took his shirt off, jumped over the advertising hoardings, and then just disappeared. It looked like he'd gone down, like there was a moat behind it or whatever. I think his family were there and they'd taken him down. And you think, oh, he's done himself an injury there. But he was fine. But after that, obviously, Gianfranco Zola, who was then the coach of Watford, was very gracious. And so, in the little press room beneath the main stand at Vicarage Road, was Nigel Pearson. And that's, I think, a side to him that people don't really see. He's very, very sergeant majorly, very opinionated. He can be very short with journalists. And, you know, I think, in fairness, that's what Watford think they're getting in. Someone who's no nonsense, who's going to strip back all the waste and, you know, get them doing things properly, I suppose. But in that moment, when they'd had the most crushing disappointment, it's dreadful going out in the playoffs anyway, but going out in that fashion so late on, and he was so incredibly gentlemanly, complimentary to Watford, complimentary to Gianfranco Zola, didn't dwell on his team's problems, thanked his players, which I thought was really great. I would not be surprised at all if there are people at Watford who remember that, because it was actually quite an arresting press conference. Very disarming, not what we were expecting at all. And I wouldn't be surprised if there were a few people there at Watford, because this was very early in the Pozzo reign, but it was still in the Pozzo era. A few people at Watford who've looked at that and thought, yeah, actually, this is a guy who... Not just a coach who's right for the situation, but a good guy who people in this club of a certain size can relate to, and someone who's got integrity.
Must be really difficult as well to be gracious in a defeat like that, of that nature, and to gain that respect from, as you say, Watford fans, people at Watford that work at the club. He probably gained a lot of respect in that sense. Mm. I think that perhaps the reason why we were all so surprised by the appointment is because he's sort of been off the radar, hasn't he? Because he's not been managing in English football. He was off managing in Belgium for a couple of years. So not many of us really kept up to date with what he was doing. And I think I've got a couple of mates who are Watford fans who at first were a bit like, what? Nigel Pearson? Mm. But now they've kind of come round to the idea of it. I think that they needed an English coach, and Ben Foster, particularly after midweek against Leicester, he was vocal in his post-match interviews about Watford needing an English coach. So clearly the board listen to that. And as you've already pointed out, Andy, he's got a track record of having kept Leicester up after they were bottom. I think they were only, at the time, the third club to survive having been bottom at Christmas. And they were actually bottom of the table with 9 matches to go. And it was the draw against Sunderland which kept Leicester up that season, which is just quite incredible that he's done that. So, you know, I think Watford fans now will be looking on and thinking, it is actually possible. Now, there's a lot of work that needs to be done by Nigel Pearson and his team that are coming in. First of all, they need to be scoring goals. And we've talked already before, Andy, about Troy Deeney, haven't we? And how,
yes,
you know, it's been tough for Kike Sanchez Flores and Javi Gracia, who didn't have many games where Troy Deeney was fit. Troy Deeney's now been back for a couple of games. He needs to get him firing. He needs to get him, I mean, he's never short of confidence, Troy Deeney, is he? But he needs to get him finding the back of the net and get him scoring goals. Once they get that side going, I think there could potentially be a turnaround for Watford, because everyone's been saying, you know, this isn't a team, when you look at the squad on paper, you can never say a team are too good to go down, but it almost feels like that with Watford.
And you don't look at the squad and think it's trash, do you?
No, you don't. No. And really interestingly, in the programme notes, Troy Deeney pointed out that after the Leicester game midweek, he was speaking to Brendan Rodgers after the game. And
asking him if he wanted to come back, maybe?
No, he wasn't asking him to come back. He actually said to Troy, apparently, according to Troy Deeney in these programme notes, that he can't believe Watford are where they are, because he said they performed really well against Leicester.
Mm.
And that's really interesting from one of the top coaches in the Premier League, Leicester City, who are second and obviously playing brilliant football, to hear that from him when your team are bottom of the table. And we've talked about it before as well, Andy, haven't we? That Watford have put in some decent performances. They've just not done it for 90 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the time I've seen them in the flesh this season was away at Tottenham. And they should have won that game. Dele Alli got a contestable equaliser in the last 10 minutes of that game. But they're excellent. And of course, that was under Kike Sanchez Flores. But who knows if it had turned out, that it might have turned out differently for them if they'd have been able to see that over the line. You know, there's a few games where they could have got better results than they actually did. But yeah, I'm really interested to see how Pearson turns out. There's some interesting little nuggets about him as well, isn't there, in the Adam Leventhal piece. Of course, Adam Leventhal so well connected at Watford, in The Athletic over the last little while, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I mean, Adam Leventhal talks about how Nigel Pearson, you know, has this background where he's got a degree in history, hasn't he? Mm. And all the things that he's going to put in place and try and turn things around at Watford. I mean,
the story about him wrestling the bear is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, when he was off camping. I think it was maybe either during or after he was Leicester City coach, and he was confronted by a bear when he was camping in the wilds. And he told it, presumably in that voice, to shove off.
Yeah, you can imagine it, can't you? I mean, the thing is that he's now going to have a full week of training with the players before their next game, but it's not exactly an easy game, is it? They face Liverpool at Anfield in his first game in charge.
What kind of a free hit, though?
Yeah, I suppose you could look at it like that.
Don't lose 6-0 and you'll be fine, won't you, really?
I think the thing is, though, is I look at it as, you know, when I'm picking my fantasy football team each weekend, I look at Liverpool playing against Watford, and you look at that and you go, pile in on the Liverpool players, captain your Liverpool player, because defensively, Watford have been poor. You know, they did keep a clean sheet against Crystal Palace at the weekend, but that doesn't say a lot, because Crystal Palace haven't been scoring that many goals this season. So, I don't know. I think this is a really tough game. But as you say, maybe they will look at it as a free hit, Andy.
You know what? I might have a little bet on them and cash out later on.
Oh, don't.
I'm convincing myself. Maybe it's the power of Nigel Pearson. You know, as he was walking around the pitch, that's the detail I really like from Adam Leventhal. While he was doing that sort of barrel-chested walk around the pitch at the Palace game, they were playing that song Making Plans for Nigel.
Do you know what?
XTC.
I'd never heard this song before. It was actually written in one of my intros for BT Sport on Saturday, Making Plans for Nigel, and I clearly didn't get the joke because I've never heard that song before.
You weren't missing much.
No, it's not a great song, is it? Apparently, I was meant to know this song.
I don't believe XTC are listeners.
I'd never ever heard of it. So, but yeah, I think the fans, you know, they gave them a good reception, didn't they, at Vicarage Road on Saturday? And I think that the fans will now start to believe in what he can do there, because he's proven he's done it before and kept the team up when they've been bottom. So you never know. We'll have to wait and see. But I am intrigued to see whether they can turn it around.
Talking of turning things around, there's been very little pressure so far on Aston Villa, have they? They were beaten quite heavily by Leicester at the weekend. Again, they'll get let away with it,
wasn't it? I think they played really well for the beginning.
Yeah, but you know what? That is the most Villa 1920 thing to say, because you could have said that about them right going back to the start of the season when they were the better team against Tottenham for probably an hour and ended up losing that game 3-1. I think they're in a curious situation, Villa, because they're not safe by any means. Of course, they came up through the playoffs anyway, trying really hard to re-establish themselves in the top flight. They obviously believe in Dean Smith. They've just given him this extended contract, but it felt to me like a weird point to extend his contract, because it's just like, you know, when before major championships, like Jogi Löw and Fernando Santos and people like that get given extended contracts. And I think, why would you give a coach an extended contract before a major championship? Because everything changes after an international coach. And I feel the same with Dean Smith. The fact that there must be expectation on him. I know he's a Villa boy, and I know he's a good coach, and I know people rate him, and that's great. But things change so much. I don't think Villa can particularly afford to go down. I mean, you look at what they spent last summer. They spent an absolute fortune. Look at some of the players they brought in. Vesley, of course. Matt Target, Tyrone Mings, Konsa, Engels, Trezeguet, David Luiz, even Marvelous Nakamba. Those are all like...
What a name, by the way.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So good. But, you know, you look at that. That's, what, 100 million straight off the bat? Do you expect something from that? Surely, don't you? I mean, there's more pressure on them, and not just because of the size of club they are, but there's more pressure on them than there is on Sheffield United and Norwich. Yeah. And because they're neither Sheffield United nor Norwich, the fact that they haven't really been getting the results has kind of slipped through the cracks.
Yeah, similar to last year when Fulham came up and they spent a fortune and they just never gelled throughout the season. And now you look at Fulham in the Championship and... I mean, they're absolutely flying and scoring goals for fun and look like one of the teams most likely to get promoted this season. And you look at a player like Aleksandar Mitrovic, who is top scorer in the Championship, and in the Premier League, it just didn't quite work out, but probably not for his own fault, but because so much money was spent on other players in the squad. How do you then make that all gel? And I think it's a similar thing with Aston Villa. You know, I do think it's tough when you buy, you know, you buy a new striker like Wesley, and that is hard to adapt to the Premier League as a new player. And, we've talked before on Jules and Andy about how long it takes players coming into the Premier League to adjust to everything that the Premier League brings. And Wesley needs to be scoring more goals. The money they spent on him, the fact that he is their target man, and he's just not quite done enough yet. You know, they're relying on the likes of Jack Grealish and John McGinn. And to be fair, they've been getting goals from, you know, players all around the pitch, but it's not quite enough. And now they find themselves just outside of the relegation zone on goal difference. And I think they've actually been fortunate in a way that other teams have been so bad, you know, like we've just talked about Watford. No one expected Watford to be down there. No, I don't think anyone expected Southampton to be quite as bad as they've been, because they were so resurgent under Ralf Hasenhüttl in the back end of last season.
And did we expect Southampton would learn a lesson after last season as well, which they don't seem to have done at all?
No, yeah, exactly. So I think in a sense, the reason why maybe Aston Villa have gone a little bit off the radar in terms of a team that we talk about being down there is because it's been surprising to see teams like West Ham and Everton and Watford down there, that's what the focus has kind of been on. And there's been less focus so much on the teams that have come up. Obviously, Sheffield United have done so well. And then Aston Villa have kind of been maybe more the forgotten team that have come up, because everyone's been talking about Norwich because they've sort of done what most people were expecting, started quite well, and then it's kind of now all become a bit of a reality and they are where they are. So, I think it's they have kind of been a little bit out of the spotlight.
It's funny, the Fulhamish comparison that you made, I think, is a pretty interesting one, Jules, because pretty much no one has looked at that. And of course, when you come up to the Premier League, especially through the playoffs, it's normal that you're going to have to go out and buy some players. I mean, something that's always overlooked about Fulham is the fact that a lot of their players from their promotion team were loaned. So they had to go out there and get some more players. That was simply inevitable. And in terms of quality, I don't think you could argue with many of those players that they brought in. But for Villa, I think you can overlook the amount of change there's been, simply because, as you were pointing out there, the players that we most strongly identify with Villa's season so far, Tyrone Mings, because he's playing for England, Jack Grealish, because he leads from the front and he's their best player, and John McGinn, because he's also very exciting, they're already there. Of course, Mings, they completed his permanent signing this summer, but he'd already been on loan there last season. So because they're the key pieces, you can forget how much new blood there is elsewhere. I mean, Trezeguet is a really good example. Good player in Turkey for Kasımpaşa, but it's a huge leap from a team that's essentially a mid-table side in the Turkish Super League to be expected to come and do it in the Premier League every single week for a team that's finding its feet. We've seen more and more from Trezeguet in recent weeks that suggested he's going to be a good player for Villa, but they need it to happen more quickly, just like you were saying with Wesley.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just going back to the point of why maybe they have been a little bit out of the spotlight is because I think when they came up, we did sort of talk about, oh, they've spent a lot of money. How are they going to make it work in the Premier League this year? And I think because they had a mixed bag of results in their, say, opening 6 or 7 games,
it's difficult to make a hard and fast conclusion.
Yeah, because no one was like, oh, well, they're gonna struggle, or it wasn't like, oh, they're absolutely flying. We talked about Sheffield United flying, and then we talked about, oh, Norwich will probably eventually struggle. But with Villa, they were sort of a little bit more unpredictable.
Yeah,
and now I think it's come to a point where we kind of know what we're going to get with Aston Villa. You're going to get moments of brilliance from their star players, like you mentioned, Jack Grealish particularly, who, I still think he actually played quite well at the weekend. But it's just unfortunate, really, that they don't do it for the full 90 minutes and they concede so many goals, Aston Villa. And that's really their problem. I mean, they were unfortunate to lose Tyrone Mings early on in the game as well to injury. But that, for me, is probably what it was. You know, they beat Everton in their second game of the season, and I remember the Arsenal game, they were, I think I vaguely remember, it was probably like the fourth or fifth game of the season, and I think they were quite unlucky not to win that one.
They should have won it, but it was kind of like the Spurs game in that they didn't manage to close it out. And that's a definite issue, isn't it?
Yeah. On Dean Smith, I think we talk about managers getting their contracts extended and renewed. It's sort of, as you've already mentioned, it's sort of weird timing, isn't it, Andy? And it's similar to Graham Potter at Brighton. His contract was extended to 2025 just a couple of weeks ago. And I loved that Graham Potter's honesty on it, because they asked him about it in one of the press conferences. And he actually said, oh, to be honest, I was quite surprised. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit strange timing, really, because, you know, he'd only been at the club for a few months, but they're obviously happy with what they're seeing. And I can only imagine that that's a similar thing with Dean Smith at Villa.
Well, that's the thing. You get that, and you get like Brendan Rodgers as you say, and the Potter and Rodgers ones, I think, are very specific, because it's clearly they're protecting.
Don't leave us, Graham.
They're protecting them from predators, because they've impressed so far this season.
Do you think Brendan Rodgers was a bit clever though? Because he sort of when they asked him about the Arsenal job, he went, well, you know. He didn't say I don't want it, and I reckon he was going, come on, Leicester.
He said he didn't want it after he got the extension.
I know,
wasn't he? But it's incredible if you think about it. Say if Graham Potter did go to term, say if he did go to 2025, that's a long time to be at a football club. If he ends up staying at Brighton until 2025, he'll have been like one of the greatest managers in club's history.
Well, that's like Eddie Howe type of reign, isn't it?
And yeah, we're talking Klopp at Dortmund or whatever, aren't we?
You look at Eddie Howe in the Premier League and you think, has he been there 7 years, Bournemouth? Something like that.
This spell.
Yeah, this spell.
Yeah.
And you just think like, God, that's such a long time to be manager of a club.
Too long, some might say.
Yeah, some might say that. And you know, when you talk about Brendan Rodgers and the Leicester contract, it's interesting because one of the questions that we asked on BT at the weekend was, do you think Brendan Rodgers will still be there in 2025? And I think that the honest opinion is probably not, but not because that's not anything negative on Brendan Rodgers. That's just football in this day and age, isn't it?
It's interesting though, isn't it, that we think of that as a golden handcuff sort of situation, because if, I don't know, Arsenal were still in a bad spot in a year down the line and they decided they absolutely had to have Rodgers, like Leicester, there would be a standoff. Leicester would say, well, we want 20 million for him or something that's considered ridiculous. And Arsenal would say no and it wouldn't happen. A bit like when Everton originally went in for Marco Silva, for example. But it still absolutely perplexes me, the fact that you go out there and spend like 20, 25 million on a supplementary forward. But for the coach, the guy who could turn it all around. And if you look at the current power of the Premier League, especially in a Champions League context, why is it? It's because the best coaches in the world are at the top of the English Premier League. That is why. So why won't clubs say, you know what, let's be serious. Let's go out there and spend, you know, you'd spend like 50 million on Aubameyang when maybe he's not the priority player that you particularly need. I mean, that's got something to do with Arsenal's squad building. But you won't spend 20 million on a coach, or you won't spend 25 million on a coach.
Yeah, it's interesting. And just a last one on Aston Villa, because I've just remembered something that someone told me last week, that John Terry was actually approached by a Championship club to go and manage there this season, and he turned the offer down. Now, I thought that was quite interesting because it either says a lot about the work that him and Dean Smith are doing together at Aston Villa, or what does it say about John Terry that he doesn't want to go down to the Championship? I'm not really sure, but I want to look at it from an Aston Villa point of view, because obviously that's where he started his coaching and he's clearly very loved there by the team that he works with and by the players. So it'll be interesting to see whether that is a path that John Terry takes or whether he does decide to stick with it at Aston Villa and Dean Smith on this journey that Dean Smith's now going to go on with the club for quite a few years.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily. You can, of course, get in touch with us at Twitter, at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, at Football Ramble. Also, julesandandy@footballrambledaily.com if you're an emailer. And there are plenty of emailers out there. We'll get to some of them later. Lots of tree chat and all the rest of it later on.
Well, you promised me some Christmas baubles from Leon and you didn't bring me any.
No, you know why? They sold them in a box of, I think, 12, which was really expensive.
I don't deserve it.
No, that's not what I mean, Jules. Don't twist my words. What I mean is
my little baby tree on my dining table is still bare. I've still not found any mini decor for it.
Look, Dortmund are going to come through for you. I know that. Also, I wouldn't want to be presumptuous and completely OL out your tree.
True.
I bet even Memphis hasn't got 12 Leon baubles on his tree.
We've got quite a few about Christmas trees though. Go on then. Let's have a read of what everyone's saying.
We have. People have sent pictures. Neil Biggerstaff says, love listening to the podcast. Here in Canada, you can buy baubles in the dollar shop, and he's offered to send some over if we're short, which is pretty good. Sam Fluitt has said there are some mini baubles that could decorate your tree. That's the other thing about 12 full size baubles.
Yeah,
they could capsize your little tree.
They would.
To be fair, and there's also one about stockings.
Oh,
we were talking
what
about
kind of
stockings?
Oh, those stockings.
Dear Jules and Andy too, I fully support your love of stockings. And wanted
Do
to
you
share,
love stockings, Andy?
And wanted to share my grandparents' solution. When the grandkids began to number too many to fit all of our stockings above the fireplace, they started using a stocking stand to hang the family stockings, something along these lines, but bigger since I have about a dozen cousins. That's what it looks like.
Oh, there's
Jules.
A little photo. That's adorable.
I love that. Yeah, it's basically like...
It's like a coat hanger.
Exactly.
But
it's like a coat rack, but with the spokes, like, sort of put equidistant down the pole.
I like it. Maybe next year. It's too late this year. I'm done with my decorations. I just need some new little mini baubles for my miniature tree, and then I'm done. I got my first Christmas cards yesterday as well.
What, received or gave?
Received both. I had a girly day with my friends, and obviously we do all the exchanging of cards. One of my mates, by the way, never does Christmas cards. So we decided that from now on, she's not getting a Christmas card from any of us. Because every year we meet up, all the girls, and we give each other Christmas cards. And every year, Sarah, I'm going to call you out, she never gives any of us a Christmas card. And we always give her one. So we've decided that's it. It's over, Sarah. No more cards. Yeah.
Wow, serious. Do you know who does give out cards?
Who?
Gareth Southgate. Have you seen, like, if you buy tickets for England-Denmark by a certain date, you get a personally signed Christmas card by Gareth Southgate?
I love that.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
That is pretty good.
But we'll be back with more of your correspondence later. You've been in touch via Twitter as well.
Yes, lots of you have been getting in touch. Andy, you put out a call for some questions, didn't you?
We'll get to those a bit later. But there's something else we wanted to discuss from the weekend. And mainly, sadly, on the weekend where Stonewall's Rainbow Laces campaign was in full effect, Brighton, as per The Guardian, have confirmed two Wolves supporters were ejected from the Amex Stadium and arrested for homophobic abuse. Now, you'd like to say this is a rare occurrence at Brighton. It's not something that happens among Brighton fans, but it's something that Brighton fans are consistently the target of, Jules.
Yeah, well, obviously, having been to plenty of Brighton games, both home and away, it is abuse that is targeted at Brighton fans quite regularly. And it's just really sad, isn't it? And just a bit, I don't know what I call it. I find it quite childish, really, because you feel like that when you go to football games, of course, there is this element of, you know, you're there for the rivalry and you want to have that kind of battle with the opposition fans. But it's like that's the one thing that they feel like they can say to you and you can't say anything back. And I feel like that's why they do it. But it's just really pathetic, and it's unfair, because Brighton as a city is the most amazing place. It's where I was born and where I was brought up. And it has an incredible culture and diversity there. And it's known as the gay capital of England. And there is a huge gay community down there in Brighton, particularly in Kemp Town. If you know Brighton well, then you'll know it. And our Brighton Pride Festival every year attracts thousands of people from all over the world, and it's a wonderful place to live and I feel a brilliant place to have been brought up, because I've been brought up around this being completely normal. And I think that with the Rainbow Laces campaign, it's so good to see that the Premier League and the Football League have been supporting it, because football is a bit of a strange place when it comes to homophobia, isn't it, Andy? Because still right now, as far as I'm aware, there aren't any active male footballers who
are out
as gay. And so when we bring it back to what we were just talking about with the football fans sort of shouting gay abuse, or I don't actually know what those Wolves supporters said. I don't know whether that's public as to what exactly they said to be ejected from the Amex on Sunday.
No, and we had a similar incident at Everton versus Chelsea as well, Everton fans versus Chelsea. And again, we don't know the words used, but I think most people listening to the show can imagine where that sort of stuff was coming from.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, having been there, I know the things that in the stadium, I have heard things that have been said in the past. And it's just a shame that this is something that's still happening now. The positive side of it is that the Wolves supporters that were being homophobic have been arrested. Now, I don't think I've heard that before, where people have been arrested from a football ground after being homophobic. It's something that I can't remember, definitely not from a game that I've been to.
There were some fans taken to court for doing it a while back. I think it was an incident. I think it was at Portsmouth versus Spurs.
Okay,
I think. But yeah, it was something to do with that. So it's something that has been taken seriously. But I guess this is more in the spotlight simply because the Rainbow Laces campaign feels it's bigger than ever this year. And it's funny you were talking about Brighton and Brighton Pride, because it's fascinating. Over the weekend, I don't know if you saw on Sky where Graham Souness was talking about it, and he was saying how honestly, I thought he was fantastically frank, and he said he came from a very homophobic generation, but going to Pride at Brighton really sort of developed his attitude about it and opened his eyes in a certain way.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear that, because that's exactly what things like Pride are for. It's to educate, and I think it's similar with this Rainbow Laces campaign that the Premier League are doing and the Football League at the moment. It is to educate people about inclusion of LGBT in football and kind of accepting that it is completely normal, you know, that what you choose for your sexuality shouldn't have anything to do with the ability to support your football team or to play football. And the display that Brighton put on at the Amex was just absolutely amazing. They completely covered an entire stand from top to bottom with all the different colours of the rainbow, and it just looked amazing. I think that they did a really good job. But then you read the comments on Twitter, and I know we've said this before, you know, people on Twitter, it's not really a complete showing of what the public think, but there were so many negative comments about this display at Brighton. I couldn't actually believe it. I can't believe that still now people are making comments like they are about this campaign and about homophobia. And it's just so incredible. You know?
I mean, this is almost more depressing than what actually happens in the stadium, because, you know, I think whenever we talk about any instance of discrimination in a stadium, we're all quick to condemn it. And that's quite right, because it's not on. But I think sometimes, because we don't want to feel any sort of kinship with those sort of people who would do that, we don't really take any time to understand why they might do it. Now, I think part of it is a lot of people see the stadium as their safe space where they can just say anything. And, you know, you've seen this with ultra culture in Italy, for example, in that they feel their freedom within the stadium. Freedom means freedom to offend absolutely anyone in whichever way they see fit. And I think some people do see it like that. I think some people drink too much, and you know, I think it seems to me that there's greater and greater social cocaine use as well, which is cheaper than it's ever been. And I think that makes people more aggressive and just a bit more difficult to put up with in a certain way. So I think we've got to look at why that actually happens as well, because I don't think that sort of getting to a point where this happens less, like the Rainbow Laces campaign is great, but it's not just a case of saying you're wrong, you can't do that. That never stops anything. Unfortunately, a huge part of putting an end to this sort of stuff, or at least minimizing it, because you're never going to completely put an end to it, is relating to people whose views you find absolutely abhorrent. You've got to make that effort to connect with them, which isn't always particularly palatable, but it's something that has to be done.
It's that age old, I've paid for my ticket to be here. I can say and do what I want
exactly.
when I'm in that stadium.
Exactly.
And that is just ludicrous. Like that's not acceptable. And I think when we try and imagine why are people saying it, the only thing I can try and kind of figure out why people would be homophobic or racist or anything, if that's not exactly what their views are, but when they're in a football stadium, they shout that abuse. I imagine it's the only way they feel they can put those players off, or they can.
Well, like you'd say anything to put off the opposition.
You'd say anything and do anything to put them off.
I think there are people like that. There are definitely people like that.
Yeah, and it just can't be that way, you know. And when there are campaigns like Rainbow Laces, which, as we said, are great, and of course they help to a certain extent to educate and, you know, get the message out there. When there are certain people that say things like, oh, I think this is being forced too much on us.
Yeah.
I don't get, what do you think is being forced on you?
Actually, there was some interesting adverts put up in billboards all around Dortmund at the weekend. And it had a picture of a player showering, and it said, what does gay man do in the shower? Shower. And I thought that was amazing. It was the club later came out and said it wasn't us, even though it was done in the sort of Dortmund official typeset. They came out and said, look, it wasn't us, but we thoroughly support this this message. And I think to frame it like that, to frame it in terms of the actual abuse, I think if it's done correctly, that can be very, very important. I saw a very powerful campaign in France some years back. And I might have mentioned this before, but it showed people waiting at bus stops and going into a butcher's shop and stuff like that, you know, just everyday stuff. And you had someone who would go into a butcher's shop and shout at the person behind the counter and chant some stuff at them. And it showed all these images. And then at the end it said, well, you wouldn't behave like this in real life, so why would you behave like this in the stadium?
Completely, completely agree with that. It's exactly that. And it goes back to what I was saying a minute ago about some football fans feel like, well, I've paid money for my ticket. I come here every week. I'm a season ticket holder. I can say and do what I want. And that's not okay. You know, you should be able to, whoever you are, from whatever background you come from, whatever your sexuality is, you have every right to be there as much as the next person, and you shouldn't have to feel unwelcome or abused for any reason.
Well, it's kind of missing the point, actually, of being a football fan in the stadium. I'm not
because you're there actually to unite, because you all love the same thing, which
you're
is your football club. Yeah.
The whole point is that you've got nothing in common with a lot of the people that sit around
you. That's brought you together.
Exactly. Yeah. But you're there for a reason, and that should be the only thing that you're thinking about while you're there, really.
Yeah, I think there's interesting comparisons that we can make with the women's game as well, Andy, because I know, you know, we're both big supporters of women's football, and the difference in how open a lot of female footballers are about their sexuality in comparison to the men's game, I find really interesting, because in women's football, you know, I think the girls that are gay are quite open about that. And they, you know, I don't think that any of them feel ashamed in any way. I think that it's become a space where they can be quite open about their sexuality, about, you know, whether they're straight or whether they're gay. It doesn't matter. And I think all of their teammates all accept that. The managers accept it. And I don't feel like it's ever been an issue in women's football. Whereas across the men's game, as we've already said, there's not really anyone that's openly come out that's playing.
I guess the question would be, has it been easier for women in the game to come out? Because, of course, things are changing a lot at the moment, but the media glare has been significantly less before.
Yeah.
I guess that's the question, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Interestingly, though, I do know a couple of footballers that are gay that haven't come out. So it is interesting.
Same, yeah.
So it's, you know, it's one of those things.
I mean, it's a personal choice as well.
Yeah,
like, people shouldn't be forced into being a standard bearer. You know, it is their personal life. It's not a soap opera. And, you know, it's not about that, is it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've had a load of responses via Twitter as well. One from Mr. Marcus Speller here. Why are you recording early?
Do you actually want to know why we're recording early? Probably. We're recording early because I have got some BT Sport Action Woman Awards tonight to go to.
Yes,
so I've got to dash off a bit earlier to go to that. But it's going to be interesting. I'm going to be surrounded by amazing women in sport. So Katarina Johnson-Thompson's up for award.
Oh, amazing.
Dina Rasher-Smith, Claire Balding's going to be hosting the night. So yeah, it's going to be really exciting.
And all of you are missing West Ham versus Arsenal.
I'm going to be,
Probably a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of which, Ryan Morehouse has written in, how come the media don't link Arsenal's poor form with the Europa League campaign or doing a Burnley, in inverted commas, or is that term reserved for less experienced teams that managed to get into the competition? Of course, the big difference with Arsenal, they went straight into the group stages, unlike Burnley or Wolves, who had to do all the qualifiers. And you know, look at Hull as well. I do wonder if that's one of Steve Bruce's regrets, that kind of prioritised the Premier League over getting through. It's definitely a lot of Hull City supporters I know regret that he didn't prioritise Europe rather than making sure they tried to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, and we've also had a final email, which I think is well worth reading out, Andy, because I feel like we've got this by mistake, this email, and I think we're in the middle. We're in the middle of an argument from Andrew, aren't we? I think we've got this by mistake, surely. This is hilarious.
Well, the thing is, when anyone refers to me as Andrew, I feel like I'm being told off. It's from Ricky Cleverly. It says, fair enough, Andrew. Totally understand that and hope the event was a success. Regards, Ricky.
Oh, it was Ricky. I thought it was from Andrew. So
it's to Andrew. That's what makes it weird.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's there's something that's gone on there between Ricky and Andrew. And I kind of want to know now. I want to know what the beef is.
It's clearly something that I've done.
All right, that's it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Make sure you continue to send in all your correspondence at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, at Football Ramble on Twitter, and we'll see you next time.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.